Welcome to episode 75 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of June 25th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, an announcement about the Fredcast, an interview with Paul Strauss, CEO of the Agency for Cycling Ethics, a listener review of the Horribly Hilly Hundreds, a discussion about riding on multi-use paths, and a discussion about riding MS rides with MS. And of course, as always, we'll also have your PodSafe cycling music for the week. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter. Go to www.thefredcast.com, click the link at the top left-hand side of the page to find out how you can get special deals at Cambria Bicycle Outfitter just for listening to the Fredcast. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, home of quality products, quality prices, and quality customer service. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and this episode of the Fredcast is the last episode of the Fredcast to be produced from Southern California. That's the big announcement about the Fredcast this week, and if you have been listening carefully for the last couple of weeks, I've definitely telegraphed this one. I've put a lot of hints into the show. Oh, I don't know, songs about Utah and upcoming events in Utah, and if you're as sharp as listener Jim, you figured it out a couple of weeks ago. My family and I indeed are moving to Utah. We're leaving Southern California this weekend and heading to our new home in Park City, Utah. What better place to do a podcast about cycling than the gorgeous Wasatch Range of Utah, where I'll not only, of course, be able to continue my road cycling, in high altitude, mind you, but also be able to take up mountain biking again, something that I've been really looking forward to. And of course, in the wintertime, when I'm going to be sweating inside like the rest of you, and I won't be able to be gloating about the fact that I'm in balmy Southern California weather and riding during the wintertime, I'll be riding inside, or I'll get the opportunity to go outside and do a little bit of cross-country or downhill skiing to keep myself in shape. So this is a fantastic, exciting time for me and for my entire family, as well as for the Fredcast, because I have no doubt that this move will be a positive influence on the show. I've got a lot of plans in store for the show, and that should explain to you why for the last couple of weeks I've sort of laid off of the news and instead gone very feature heavy, because I need to obviously do everything that I need to do to get my family moved and prepare for my Tour de France coverage. So this will be the last Fredcast produced from Southern California and the last Fredcast before the start of the 2007 Tour de France. And at that time, I'll have expanded coverage of the Tour de France, including a preview episode just a couple of days before it begins. So this is an exciting time for me, an exciting time for the Fredcast. And with that, let's get into the first feature of today's show. Now, today's show features an interview with the CEO of the Agency for Cycling Ethics. Now, you may have heard of the Agency for Cycling Ethics. It was something that was discussed around the whole Floyd Landis and Operation Puerto affairs. And if you're familiar with the U.S. Continental Pro Team slipstream, then you're probably already familiar with the Agency for Cycling Ethics. I was honored to have been asked to do this interview by our friends over at bicycle.net. And if you haven't had a chance to check out their blog, I highly recommend that you do that. They've always got excellent content at bicycle.net. So go ahead and check it out. And I want to thank bicycle.net for setting this interview up for the Fredcast. Well, Dr. Paul Strauss is, as I said, the CEO of the Agency for Cycling Ethics. He has 20 years of clinical practice experience at academic institutions on both coasts of the United States, and he's currently in practice at the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center right here in Los Angeles. He's also been a CEO of an innovative healthcare information technology company, as well as a software engineer. He's been a competitive cyclist for several years here in Southern California, and he's currently on the board of directors of LaGrange. And if you're not from Southern California, then you don't know that LaGrange is a very large, well-organized cycling club here in Los Angeles. Now, Dr. Strauss, being a physician and a USA Cycling certified coach, as well as training and racing in the amateur circuit, he understands the issues of anti-doping, both from the physician's and the athlete's perspective, and he's also a co-author of the Agency for Cycling Ethics Clean Cycling Initiative. So here's the interview I did just a couple of days ago with Dr. Paul Strauss, and once again, thanks to Bicycle.net for setting this up. So I just wanted to start off with seeing if you could just give us a real quick history, if you will, on the formation and the history of your organization, the Agency for Cycling Ethics.
The Agency for Cycling Ethics started off because amateur cyclists in the local California region and saw what the use of performance-enhancing drugs was doing to the sport that we love. And we felt that some opportunities, the stars aligned, that gave us an opportunity to actually do something about it, to form this entity called the Agency for Cycling Ethics, which we believe will have a real impact on professional cycling.
And how long ago did you start this?
About 8 months now. And like with any new entrepreneurial endeavor, we needed somebody basically to take a chance on us to be allow us to prove concept. And that opportunity, which is what I said before about the stars being aligned, was Team Slipstream, a pro-continental team that races both in the United States and in Europe. And they were willing, because they saw for an entity like this to help us start out and take a chance on us. And they've been great.
So now I want to come back to Slipstream, but I've just got to ask you, is this a day job sort of a thing? Is this something that you do for a living now? Or
no, not yet. I'm still practicing medicine. For Paul Scott, it is a day job. And for the three other members of our team, they would say they kind of have about, they take about 33%, devote about 33% of their time on this entity. But the goal, at least for me, is to make this a full-time venture. But I do spend a lot of time on it. Probably as much as I spend working in the hospital, I spend doing this also.
So, well, let's talk briefly just about the mission of the agency. What exactly are you trying to accomplish?
Well, cycling and other sports also have really had a really new perception in the public's eye because of the use of performance-enhancing drugs, because athletes are seen as breaking their own code of ethics and not competing fairly and with ethically. So our first overlying mission is to promote clean sport, and we do that through the use of a drug testing program, counseling, and education programs. But we give the resources to the teams and the athletes and the sponsors, so we make the teams, the athletes, and the sponsors accountable to each other.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because, I mean, it seems like ever since I've had my show, both of the podcasts that I do, and of course, anytime our friends at Bicycle.net are writing, it seems that all we're writing about these days, all we're talking about, is doping. Why is it that doping has become so much in the forefront of the public's knowledge when it comes to cycling? I mean, everybody I talk to, when they ask me about cycling, they say, well, they're all riding, they're all doping. Why has it become such a hot button today? And some people even ask me, so what? Who cares if they're doping as long as they put on a good show? What do you say to that?
Professional athletes are role models. And as role models, their behavior is emulated by amateurs. So if professional athletes are using performance-enhancing drugs, these are dangerous. There are consequences for not using them correctly. And the amateurs in the U.S. are using them also, or we believe they are. And they're having real negative consequences, such as strokes, such as heart attacks, things that shouldn't be happening. You know, if it was such that, for instance, the military uses illegal performance-enhancing drugs in a very useful way, but they're medically monitored resources financially and medically to use these drugs correctly. Could professional athletes do that also? Well, yeah, except they are violating their code of conduct, and that's a separate issue. But the real bigger picture is that the amateurs don't have access and will never have it, and it's dangerous. So that's one of the overlying issues. The other issue you talked about, why cycling? Why is everybody talking about use of performance-enhancing drugs in cycling when in baseball, football, and almost every other sport, it seems to be an issue, but it's not such a hot-button issue. And I think the problem in cycling, per se, is that the separate entities in cycling, it's the teams, it's the race organizers, are beating each other up, bringing attention to this issue rather than trying to solve the issue. Not that anybody should ever cover up the issue of use of performance-enhancing drugs, it's simply wrong, but there is probably better ways to handle the process of solving it.
So let's talk about how you solve it. And by the way, I agree with you 100% about the ethics, I agree with you about the danger, and I really agree with you when it comes to the role model aspect and what it can do to a young amateur who's trying to break into the sport. So how do we solve the problem? What is your agency doing?
Okay, well, first of all, the governing bodies with their punitive system that has adjudicated process will never be replaced. But it does set up an adversary relationship with the athletes and the governing bodies. We come from the other side. We come to work to teach deterrence to the teams, the sponsors, and the athletes to give them, to bond them all together, to make them work together for the goal of clean cycling. Believe it or not, even though it is a problem in cycling, there only is a minority of riders at a certain level. There are so many riders who are the younger riders coming into the sport, who are the new ones, who are angry that if they're competing, they're automatically accused of use of performance-enhancing drugs, and they're not. And one of the things that we allow the athlete teams to do is to say to the world, hey, we're competing clean. It gives them a voice in a positive way.
And, of course, that brings us to Team Slipstream and the program that they are in with you. Tell us about that.
Team Slipstream, remember, was started a few years ago by Jonathan Vodders, a very well-known professional. And it was just a U23 team. It was a young team. They saw what was going on in cycling, and they realized that they needed to attack the problem with these young, impressionable riders from a different line. So again, we had the opportunity by the alignment stars, and they liked what we were doing. Remember, we're doing two things. We're looking for bad performance, bad things in the urine, banned substances in the urine. We're also using a new science called biomarkers, which is looking at the physiological parameters of the body that would respond to the use of performance in drugs. And we have now been testing them for almost 8 months. Basically, all the athletes on the team go for weekly blood and urine tests, which is an incredible number of tests, and we're making sure these guys are not using performance-enhancing drugs. It's a great relationship. And now I believe we feel comfortable in saying we've proved concept, we've developed a logistics architecture so that we can do what we say we can do both in the United States and Europe, and we're ready to bring this to other teams in the professional peloton.
Now, this is, for the most part, a private effort that the teams and you have partnered on. But how does this relate to USADA and WADA and the UCI?
Well, it's interesting. In terms of some of USADA, and first of all, USADA and WADA are aware of us. We've had conversations with them in Montreal. The logistical structure of WADA and USADA would not allow them to do something like this. So, you know, anytime they have an adverse analytical finding, they need to go to an expensive adjudicative process. Not that we would allow people who are using drugs to permit to ride, but do the things that we're doing. They don't have the financial resources. They don't have the cooperation of the teams as much as we do. So that's so we basically will mutually coexist in this world of cycling, but we look at the problem from opposite sides. We're in an adversarial relationship at this point between the teams and sponsors and the governing bodies. And we kind of give these same type of resources for looking for performance-enhancing drugs to the team so they can take responsibility for their own actions as opposed to having somebody looking over them.
Well, let's look at some of these high-profile scandals that are going on. Of course, the Tour de France last year with the Operation Puerto affair, and of course, the one that everybody talks about, the Floyd Landis situation. Do you see a day when professional cycling might be able to get past what is viewed as this rampant doping problem?
Well, first of all, it has to get past the problem to survive, and I believe it will get past it. You know, if you look at the history of a lot of things that happen in cycling, for instance, the Balco case, in sports, people do forgive. But in order to begin this process of forgiveness by the public, I believe the entities that are part of cycling need to forgive each other. I think, again, to the governing bodies, the teams, the riders, the riders and the sponsors all need to say, okay, we've made a mistake in the past, we have to move on. That's really the first step, to acknowledge what has happened in the past, and then to how do you repair a relationship without doing that first. If you keep on focusing on the negative in the past, you can never move forward. And I think at some point they've talked about amnesty, which is not a great word, but that something like that has to happen to move forward. I mean, I really believe what happened in the past, the culture, environment of cycling, really on some level permitted the use of these drugs. And then things have changed for whatever reason. The public's perception changed. Public said, we don't want to see this anymore. And okay, so now the environment has changed and everybody needs to adapt. And as human behavior is human behavior, nothing happens instantly. It does take time, and we have to consciously and with intent make that change.
Well, you know, you talked about amnesty, and I've heard people talking about doing sort of a South Africa-style Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where people would literally come forward, admit to what they had done, so that we could learn from it and then figure out ways to prevent it in the future. Do you see a time when we would have a better international testing regimen, one where labs and procedures aren't called into doubt as they were in the Floyd Landis case?
Well, we have a much more frequent testing. I think we're looking at this new science called biomarkers, which gives us information not maybe as conclusive, but and much more suggestive of doping, but it's also a much earlier detection of a potential issue. So it can be not as used. It's used as a deterrent almost, as a behavioral deterrent of these performance-enhancing drugs, as opposed to kind of a treatment system which we have now, which is like an almost like an all-or-nothing thing. So I do see a change. I think this one of the things you talked about is the science of the testing. I hate to say it, it's not infallible. And if there's a 5% false positive rate, athletes will be unfairly accused of something. And that's why from the governing body side, you need to adjudicate a process to really make sure that you're not accusing somebody of something that they did not do. But it will never be 100%. That's the nature of science.
One of the things that came out just before the Floyd Landis hearings was that they were retesting some of his samples at the French lab. And there was a lot made in the press about the fact that it seemed that Floyd and his team wanted the samples tested at the UCLA lab. Now, I know that there are folks who are involved with your agency who are intimately involved with the UCLA lab. Can you clear that up? What exactly would have been different if it had been tested at UCLA versus tested in France, other than the fact that Floyd's team had called their procedures in France into question?
As the WADA system for labs go, every lab is responsible for their own practices. And even though there are recommendations from WADA of the conduct and standards of the labs, that's only recommendations. And in reality, all the labs have different standards and different practices, policies, and procedures. And one of the questions that the Floyd Landis team brought up is that the quality of policy or procedures in the French lab was not the same, for instance, as the UCLA lab. And so, you know, that one of their arguments, their argument was that the UCLA lab had better qualities of testing and policies and procedures and the way they conducted things. So, you know, it is the world is, again, you looking at human behavior, and if you have people in the same places, it will be done just slightly differently, and that's those slight differences could be significant.
Now, recently this week, the UCI came out with their rider pledge that they'd like all the riders who are participating in the Tour de France to sign and to attest to. What do you think about something like that? How did that strike you?
Again, well, first of all, I think one of the things I think is an issue, which is a problem, is that, again, like I said, the different parts of the cycling universe, the governing body, the teams and the sponsors and the athletes are all in this adversarial kind of situation. I think this new pledge makes that worse. Sometimes a bigger hammer is not necessarily a more effective hammer, and I think that's going to be an issue, and I don't know if that was the right thing to do. They didn't discuss anything about a more effective testing regime or anything like that. So, again, if you want people to do something, there are two ways to think about it. A really big hammer or either a negative deterrent or positive reinforcement. We're trying to approach this problem from positive reinforcement as opposed to a negative deterrent.
How can the average cycling fan get involved with your group? I mean, I've got to think that you're probably looking for some financial backing, even if it's just a couple bucks here and there. How can the average person get involved?
Well, we're actually now beginning to reach out to other corporate financial sponsors. We really just need to spread the word of competing clean and pure sport. But again, as long as we all start talking in a positive way about the sport that we really love, that's really the first step. It's funny, as we go from the professional teams and get them more involved and we expand our testing program, one of the important things we want to do beyond that is go into the amateur peloton, to the general public's perception. Well, there are two ways to do that. We can lead or people can help follow and just contribute to this process. And that's what we'd hope they would do.
Well, that's great. First of all, I want to thank you for taking time to talk to me today, and I wish you nothing but success in bringing ethics, and that's the most important thing, bringing ethics back to the professional and the amateur pelotons. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Well, I don't know if it came through in the interview, but I have to tell you, I really enjoyed talking to Dr. Strauss about the work that the Agency for Cycling Ethics is doing. As you well know, if you've been a longtime listener to the Fredcast, this doping situation has me fit to be tied. And I've said it before that I truly believe that this is about ethics and nothing else, and that it's important for these athletes who are known as role models to be role models. And so I love what Dr. Strauss is doing. More power to him. I hope that he gets more and more teams signed up and that all of us can do what needs to be done to rid our sport of doping. And I know I've said it before, but I've got to say it again. Thanks also to Bicycle.net for setting that up. And of course, thanks to Dr. Strauss for coming on the Fredcast. Well, next up is listener Mike, who sent us in a review of the Horribly Hilly Hundreds, which is a ride that I've talked about here on the Fredcast before, and one that I've said that I need to go out and do one of these years. So here's listener Mike with his review of Horribly Hilly Hundreds.
Hi, I'm Mike, and I'm a Fred. I live in the Driftless area of Wisconsin, which is the corner of southwestern Wisconsin. And this Driftless area hasn't had any glaciers in it for the last 300,000 years, which left the landscape, formed mostly by water erosion, very hilly in nature, with a bottom about 800 feet and a top upwards to 1,700 feet. That 1,700-foot peak is in Blue Mound State Park, and I wanted to tell you today about a ride that both originated and finished at that state park called the Horribly Hilly Hundreds. Happened on 16 June 2007. Now, the interesting thing about the Horribly Hilly Hundreds is it is, of course, a very hilly ride. It starts about at 7 a.m. in a mass start with 1,000 of my closest friends. We rolled off and pushed with exquisite waterproof maps, excellent signage in the road, and well-stocked rest stops. Just a very well-organized ride. I think the things that really differentiate the ride is the ability to really ride with so many people, all starting at one time, really kind of gave a very Peloton-type effect to this. I also found it interesting, many locals would come out and watch us, cheer us up on the hills. There's something I think that's intriguing to non-cyclists to see massive crowds of spandex and lycra in pain as they climb up these steep hills. Horribly Hilly has two routes, one of 100 kilometers and one of 200 kilometers, each with about 7,000 feet of climb. Of course, there's always debate on exactly how you measure those climbs. That's been chatted on the Fredcast, but let's just call each of those metric centuries With about 7,000 feet of vertical. So that means the 200K at approximately 15,000 feet, 14 to 15,000 feet, quite an effort for anyone's day. So I encourage you to come and to the Driftless Air of Wisconsin if you're interested in more routes. There's also the Dairyland Dare that's in Dodgeville, Wisconsin. That's on Saturday, August 11th. And the Right Stuff Century, Sunday, September 2nd. The Dairyland Dare has 100, 200, 266, and 300K routes. Surely a sufferfest for anyone. And the Right Stuff Century is a mere mortal century with about 9,000 feet of climb. Still a tough effort for anyone's day. But I welcome anyone to come out. It's a gorgeous place. Thank you so much. Enjoy the ride.
Well, Mike, thanks a lot for sending along that review of the ride. It sounds like a really fun one. And, you know, for the rest of you that are out there that are listeners, if there's a ride that you're doing this summer or any time that you'd like to review for the Fredcast, just do what Mike did. Send me an email. Let me know that you'd like to do the review. And then when your ride is over, send me an MP3 file or just call the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED and phone in your review of your local ride. We'd love to hear from you. Now, speaking of phoning in to the Fredcast listener hotline, here is a voicemail that I received just a couple of days ago from Kristen, who's one of the two hosts of the Manic Mommies podcast at www.manicmommies.com. Kristen and Aaron are both the hosts of the Manic Mommies. They're great people. Met them last year at the Podcast Expo. And Kristen's husband, Steve, is a Fred. As a matter of fact, he's a Fredcast listener. And Kristen is always emailing me or calling me about some cycling-related topic or another. And this is one that is also a pet peeve of mine as well. So I'll let Kristen set it up, and then I'll have a couple comments for you on the other side. Here's Kristen.
Hi, David. This is Kristen from the Manic Mommies. And I was just listening to your show, which reminded me of something that I wanted to comment on. Specifically, we have summers here, and we've started taking the kids out onto our local rec paths here in Massachusetts and in Rhode Island, too. We have a pretty good system of rails to trails and other rec paths that are great for taking the kids out for a bike ride, either on their own little bike or in, like, the seat in the back of my bike for my two-year-old. The comment I wanted to make, and I don't know if this is going to offend anyone, is that I get very irritated when I'm on these rec paths and a group of aggressive riders or even one or two aggressive riders come speeding up the path and they get mad because we're in their way or people are coming, you know, both ongoing and coming towards us and going away from us, and they swerve around people. And I guess my comment is, if you're going to ride like that, if you're riding as a large group or you're riding where you really want to, it's a true fitness ride or a ride where you're training, I think on the weekends specifically, it's important that you recognize that the rec paths are used by lots of people, by rollerbladers and walkers and dog walkers and people with kids, and that it may be good to either slow down or to move to the roads. And I understand the inherent dangers to being on the roads, but on several occasions on a two-hour bike ride, my family was nearly taken out by some of these aggressive riders, or people coming in the other direction were nearly taken out because they couldn't be bothered to slow down to wait until there was a better gap so that they could pass us. So that's it. That's my comment. As always, to everyone, much happy, safe riding, and enjoy your summer. Bye.
Hey, Kristen, thank you so much for that. And it gives me a great opportunity to get back up on my soapbox once again. So I appreciate that segue. You know, Kristen's absolutely right. And this is something that everyone who listens knows that I really have two pet peeves. Number one is doping, and number two is safety. And sometimes one is number one and the other is number two. But safety is paramount when we're out there on the roads or when we're out there on the trails. And this is actually a topic that I've gotten into with some politicians in various different cities, where on the one hand, you'll get some politicians who will say, well, we built these multi-use paths and we'd like to see the cyclists using the paths instead of using the roads. And then that inevitably leads to the discussion of how bicycles are just as much entitled to use the roads as motor vehicles, and that always becomes a huge conversation. And then you get the other politicians who say, well, we've built these paths for the pedestrians and the walkers and the dog walkers and the joggers. We want to see the bikes only on the roads. And so you can imagine the various conversations that inevitably ensue. For me, if I'm out doing a training ride on my own or in a group, I will always avoid those multi-use paths because I know that there's always going to be families riding, like Christian was talking about, or there's going to be people pushing strollers or walking their dogs, or there's going to be little kids, toddlers walking around, and that really is no place for someone on a bike in a group going upwards of 20 plus miles an hour. Those two things just don't mix. And so I couldn't agree with Kristen more that if you're going to go out on these multi-use paths, especially on a weekend, as she said, when you know there's going to be a lot of other users on the path, this is the time for you to be either extra cautious, a little bit slower, or the time for you to consider going out onto the road. I have a feeling that this could generate a bit of a buzz among the listeners. I'm willing to listen to your feedback, whether that's in email or audio form, but that's my opinion. My opinion is that those multi-use paths are for riding slowly, riding with your families, walking, jogging, walking the dogs. If you want to get out and you want to have a fitness ride or you want to have a great training ride, the best place to do it is on the road. And that's just my opinion. So, Kristen, thanks again for sending that in. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who are wondering, what the heck is a Manic Mommy? The Manic Mommies podcast is the podcast for moms and dads, by the way, who are trying to do it all and do it all well. And sometimes you're not quite doing it all well. Maybe you're just doing as much as you can. But it's a great resource for everything that a lot of parents in today's stressful society just need to know. And Kristen and Aaron do a great job with it. Go ahead and check it out at www.manicmommies.com. Well, next up is another voicemail from yet another listener. This is listener Mark in Tennessee. And I believe that Mark's voicemail probably stands on its own. So here's listener Mark.
David, hey, this is Mark Fry. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and I just rode the Charahala Challenge, which is in Knoxville, Tennessee area. It goes into North Carolina. It was 7,500 feet on the metric climb, about 62 miles, and I burned about 6,500 calories. So on the way back to Nashville, I was listening to the Fredcast, and it really, you kind of, for the day, I forgot I had MS. I was diagnosed in 98. And I rode that ride, and I've had it now for almost 10 years, and it really, I've ridden so many MS-150s, and I heard you talking about the MS-150s and someone in your family affected by MS. I just want to let you know that there are people, some of us with MS out here, that appreciate you at least supporting the MS Society and know what you're going through with somebody in your family with MS. And my goal is to ride as long as I can. I've been doing it for a while, and I just appreciate the Fredcast. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you for your voicemail. And for those of you who aren't familiar with MS, it is it's an autoimmune disease, but it manifests itself as a neurological disorder. And for folks who have MS, they can have an exacerbation and be unable to walk, be unable to see. And if they've got the kind of MS where it's relapsing and remitting, with some fantastic medications, they can be back on their bikes or back taking care of their kids or whatever it is they do every day within a few days or sometimes weeks or months. And then there are others who have a progressive form of the disease, which slowly degrades their nervous system to the point where a lot of times they'll end up in a wheelchair and needing a lot of assistance. So to hear from a listener like Mark or like some of my own friends who participate in the Orange County to San Diego MS bike tour every year, or even my wife who's planning on riding in that ride this year, to see them out there riding their bikes, doing these walks, to raise money, not just for themselves, but for others other people who are afflicted with multiple sclerosis is a fantastic encouragement and inspiration to me as well as to others. So, Mark, thank you so much for your voicemail and for your courage, and keep on riding, because it is that which will help you keep this illness at bay. So thank you for your inspiration. And with that inspirational message, we're going to start closing out the show. But a couple of things, so stay tuned, keep with me here all the way till the end. Number one, as you may have noticed, as I mentioned last week, I've done a lot of work on the Fredcast forums to keep them family friendly and to keep all those dirty spammers out of there. And I hope that you've noticed, and I hope that you will revisit the Fredcast forums. Go to www.thefredcast.com and click on the forums link at the top of the page, and you'll be able to join in the conversation there. In the meantime, keep spreading the word about the Fredcast. Please tell your friends, write a review on iTunes, or vote for us at Podcast Alley, and there are links in the show notes, as well as on the website at www.thefredcast.com. I'm going to be off for about a week and a half. In the meantime, I will be reading your emails. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com, or like Kristen and Mark, go ahead and use the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. And of course, before we sign off tonight, before we do our last moments of our last show from Southern California, we're going to do PodSafe Cycling music as we do every week. This week's music comes to us, as it always does, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. For this week's show, just something a little bit special, I've got two PodSafe Cycling music songs for you. The first, the aptly named and the perfect song for this week, it's called Moving On by Steve Parsons. And then following that, California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas, from when they appeared at the Monterey International Pop Festival. Links for the songs and for both artists are found in the show notes for tonight's show, as always. So for about a week and a half, I'll be off from the Fredcast as I move to the new location in Park City, Utah, in advance of the upcoming 2007 Tour de France. Take heart, I will be back with expanded coverage of this year's tour. So between now and then, enjoy all this music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Lost in a moment, drifting in limbo, stuck with the images you see. I throw you a lifeline, a simple suggestion. There's so much more than you were made to be. Life's moving on. You've been standing still so long. It's time to break through. Good days lie ahead of you. possibilities. Can you see them all around you? All the certain possibilities. Life's moving.
We'd like to sing a song that was based upon this very great land in which we are now sitting and squatting upon. This every year, you know. You all can stay if you want. I think I might.